take you back with vengeance for your captors. Brush over the scars there from fighting after dark, and the winds that whipped your red cheeks. You say you'll be gone for weeks. Why?
Welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. This is 2 hours of local talk on civil rights issues, anti-war stuff, a lot of information about, well, I don't know how much information, but civil rights arguments around civil rights for poor people outside, houseless people who are particularly subject to misconduct, second-class citizenship, and so forth. You've just been listening to Lauren Shara's In My Bones. The song was Hands of a Pirate, and it's a track I played because it was a street performer that sang, well, that put out this album. She came to Santa Cruz about a week or two ago and was singing on the streets, and I thought it was time to play a little bit of what she was singing. Actually, that's not entirely accurate. I think I ran into her at the farmer's market. But she claims to be a local performer in that regard. And I believe she's been on the streets. So that's... Anyway, that was a song, again, called Hands of a Pirate. And for pirate radio, what could be more appropriate? Anyway, I'm hoping to hear soon from Tacoma. I talked earlier today with attorney Larry Hildes. You may not remember, except you old-timers, Larry Hildes. Larry is an attorney who has come a controversial among local activists. He's been attacked for being too far out in terms of his passionate advocacy for the causes he speaks for. He's been praised for that same reason. He was my attorney when I was in jail for serving food to the homeless 11 years ago in San Francisco. He also defended the City Hall sleepers, the City Hall sleepers protest that same year, 1996. He defended activist Pat Ring in 1997 in a homeless protest. He's done a lot of work throughout the Pacific Coast, and I ran into him, not personally recently, but by proxy, so to speak, because I was following a story that was sent my way by a Palo Alto activist. No, it was either a Palo Alto activist or Mike Rhodes in Fresno, who you've heard on this station before, doing some really great work setting up the conditions for a federal court ruling with his photographic and journalistic work on IndieBay.org, where he does stories. IndieBay.org/Central Valley is the website to go to, IndieBay.org/Central Valley, all one word. You also, of course, should check out Santa Cruz, IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz, which also has some, not as much stuff as some of the other IndieBay websites, but it does do some follow-up on homeless civil rights stories in Santa Cruz, more so than, there are other websites that do too, but more so than any other general website that I know of. You can also check out, for those of you who are website buffs, huffsantacruz.org. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And also humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com, humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com, which is a Tim Rumford's website, which really is great. I mean, it's up to date. It's got all kinds of photographic and video stuff, and it's done in conjunction with an activist. Well, the activist who does it not only does the reporting, but he's out on the streets making the news. He's feeding people in front of New Leaf Market on Monday nights, and you can check him out between 6 and 7:30 down there in front of New Leaf in Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue. There's also similar events that happen on Tuesday and Wednesday. Valerie Christie does a kind of a Huff street performer feeding on Tuesday night. And the SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expressions, Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, as I call them, does an event occasionally with a muffin or two, a donut or two, not so much food, on Wednesday night. It was quite a rockin' affair last night, and I was actually wandering around getting some interviews, which I may be playing as we roll through the next 2 hours. But I'm going to turn now to this story that's kind of dear to my heart because it's very reminiscent of what's happened to me. Person arrested at Tacoma City Council meeting. And this is something that happened, when did it happen? It happened, it says today, and today would be March 7th, so yesterday. Today, a group of us went down to the Tacoma. Tacoma's a city, fairly large city in Washington State, somewhat near Seattle. It's sort of up in the northwest corner of the state. Today, a group of us went down to the Tacoma City Council meeting to talk during the public speaking section after a couple of us had spoken our mind about the brutality of the police at the port. Wally Cutterford, who was arrested and tased 3 times on Saturday, got up to read something he had written. When he began shedding light on the fact that the Tacoma Police Department, the TPD, allowed their chief to use their resources to stalk his wife and connected that with how he did not expect the police to ever be accountable for their actions, the council tried to silence him. When he continued to speak, A council member told the police to remove him from the building. They pulled his arms behind his back and dragged him out, screaming in pain. They arrested him, put him in a cruiser, and took him to jail. Luckily, I was able to ask him if he wanted us to bond him out, and he answered no. Make no mistake about it. The police are human, true, but they are fucked up human beings empowered by the state to silence political dissent. This was another manifestation and points, along with what happened on Saturday, to an increase in the amount of force used to crush even the smallest amounts of dissent. I just learned as I was writing this that while he will be released from Pierce County Jail, have his arraignment first at the county's, and gives him times and places, charged with obstructing a public servant and criminal trespass. We're trying to speak at city council. That's the news. The relevant, if we kind of go back a little bit, this is a felony assault charges were originally preferred against him. I'm kind of working back when I probably should be working forward, but hey, who knows? Maybe this call won't come through, and so I'll move on to another subject, more local. But it really has to do with events that are going to be happening tomorrow up in Tacoma, Washington. Cutterford was among a group of activists who were protesting the Stryker Brigade going through on its way to Iraq. And I'm going to read a little bit about that here. It's actually the main action is going to be happening tomorrow, I believe. That's a call for action tomorrow. That was at least, I think, what I understand from Portland Indie Media. There are several eyewitness reports that the three people who were arrested for peacefully protesting at the port of Tacoma about 12:30 a.m. Monday morning, March 5th, they were protesting the shipment of Stryker Brigade equipment to the illegal war and occupation in Iraq. One person was brutally dragged in his stomach, and another was shot by a rubber bullet as they were engaged in nonviolent protests. The Tacoma police appeared to become less violent after the media arrived. The war is now being fought, brought home in profound ways. These protests were part of a continuation of protests begun last year against the use of the Port of Olympia to ship offensive weapons to Iraq. The military at Fort Lewis decided this year to avoid the use of the Port of Olympia, but rather to ship arms at the Port of Tacoma. I don't think they're too far apart, less than 100 miles, I think, but military equipment is still at the port of Tacoma, and peaceful protests are expected to continue this week at the port and elsewhere in the city. A vigil is planned for the Olympia Port Military Resistance, Militarization Resistance, and the Tacoma Port Militarization Resistance. This was earlier this week. Olympia Port Militarization Resistance, a local grassroots organization up in Washington, is claiming victory in its campaign to close the Port of Olympia to military shipment bound for Iraq as part of President Bush's escalation of the conflict. The decision by the U.S. Army to not use the Port of Olympia to ship the 4th Brigade, 2nd Division Stryker Unit's equipment to Iraq is a clear recognition that choosing to do so would have been a logistical and public relations disaster for the Port of Olympia and the Fort Lewis-based Stryker Group. This is a tremendous victory in the campaign to end our community's participation in the illegal and immoral occupation of Iraq, said T.J. Johnson, an Olympia city councilman. Try to imagine a local Santa Cruz city councilman saying something like this, who has helped spearhead the campaign. He added that our success in Olympia can serve as a powerful model and beacon of hope for other communities seeking to take direct action, something that the Riley City Council just couldn't conceive of doing, to end their community's participation. The Army's decision to not risk the consequences of shipping the Stryker unit through Olympia forced it to move equipment through the Port of Tacoma. Military equipment began arriving at the Port of Tacoma around 10:30 p.m. on March 2nd. Additional equipment arrived late in the day on March 3rd and 4th. And apparently there's more to this story. But I guess the big story is going to be happening tomorrow. Let's see here. Northwest call to action, converge on Tacoma to resist escalation of the war. In Tacoma, Washington, we are witnessing Bush's surge right now. The armored Strykers are being brought in from Fort Lewis to the port of Tacoma. We expect the Strykers of the 4th Brigade, 2nd Infantry, to be loaded onto the military ships bound for the Persian Gulf starting Friday, tomorrow, which normally takes 3 days. It gives us less than a week. This was written a week ago to prepare. By slowing or stopping the Strykers from being loaded, we are drawing attention to the criminal escalation of the Iraq war against the will of the American people. Join the port resistance. Keep the 4th home. And there was a march on last night and a vigil against the war. There's another march today, and then there'll be another march tomorrow. This is all up in Tacoma. Details, Caitlin Esworthy was arrested within seconds after the Tacoma Police Disorder Response Team confronted the protesters. Wally Cuddeford, a Navy veteran, was then brutally dragged in his stomach just after his arrest was captured on video. Another protester, Jeff Berryhill, was later shot by a rubber bullet as he nonviolently held a sign at the edge of the street. Police also aimed shotguns and tasers directly at protesters. The Tacoma police appeared to become less violent after the TV media finally arrived. Media who want eyewitness testimony of the arrest should call so-and-so and such-and-such. Our actions are not against the troops. Block the strikers. Save the troops from escalation of the war. How about saving the Iraqis from the arrival of the troops? Wouldn't that be nice? Approximately 300 striker vehicles that are being shipped to Iraq from the Port of Tacoma in advance of the deployment of the 4th Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division from Fort Lewis. The 4th Brigade is being deployed earlier than planned as part of Bush's suicidal surge. They're being deployed so quickly that they're forced to skip their final desert training in California. The worst thing that will endanger the troops is to ship them over to Iraq. Our actions are being conducted out of comfort for the lives of U.S. soldiers, or concern, sorry, for the lives of U.S. soldiers, and equally, the lives of Iraqi people. Glad they could kind of get that in there somewhere. The protests are part of a continuation of actions that begun last year against the use of the Port of Olympia to ship offensive weapons to Iraq. Last year, the shipments were made during broad daylight, and the Olympia community responded with strong resistance. This year, the military decided to avoid the Port of Olympia, instead using the Port of Tacoma under the cover of darkness. And you can get more about this by going to portlandindiebay.org. In the studio with me, apparently gearing up for a description of his heart-to-heart talk with Mayor Emily Riley. Not about the war, of course, because all we're doing with respect to the war is a somewhat soft-headed resolution that says, let's all follow Representative Farr's lead. And, of course, Representative Farr, although he has introduced a resolution asking for the end of the use of force resolution from 2002, which got us into Iraq, is not opposing the broader military budget. He's opposing the supplemental appropriation, but not the broader military budget, which includes lots of money for the Iraqi occupation and daily murder of Iraqi citizens. I have to call it murder, not because soldiers are setting out in any intentional way to take away people's lives, but because they're ready to do so at the snap of a fingers, and they're doing so in a foreign country on the orders of a government that they're obeying without any question. At least I suspect 99% of these soldiers are. I may have a vet in the studio with me. Sir, are you a vet?
Not proud, but yes, a vet.
A vet of what? Are you a killer? Have you killed people overseas?
I would not be willing to answer that. However, as a soldier, you have to admit that you were at least attempting murder of foreign citizens.
Where did this criminal behavior of yours take place, sir?
Particularly in Vietnam, but also I was in the South during the riots in, I can't remember what town it was, but I did courier for some of the military commands down in, it was Alabama.
It's in the 60s? Or?
That was 67.
We're talking, of course, with repentant war criminal, recovering war criminal, Bob Patton, who's not normally here and under this capacity.
Recovering macho.
Ah, yes. Well, And Bob, I guess I'm going to kind of slowly turn the conversation, rather abruptly, actually, rather than slowly, to a meeting you had this afternoon, not because I have any great hopes that it was particularly significant, but because you had it, I guess. And because you are one of the co-founders of the Human Rights Organization that meets every Saturday at, I guess it's 115 Coral Street in the Dining Bay. For those who are interested, that's a group concerned with ending the sleeping ban, yes?
Yeah, basically ending the sleeping ban. We also are attacking other aspects of these so-called downtown ordinances, behavior ordinances, whatever you want to call
it. These are laws that criminalize poor people and are essentially concerned with getting poor people out of sight and out of town. Sleeping ban makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night on public property and much private property, but they're, at the same time, Santa Cruz provides emergency shelter for less than 10% of the homeless population tonight, less than 5% for 8 months of the year, and does this whole enforcement process is being done in contempt of the Jones decision, the decision in Los Angeles.
And that was the main reason we went tonight and for our second interview.
However,
with,
I have bad news for you, Bob. We have our caller from Tacoma,
oh,
I think,
no,
is calling
in,
so we're going to have to postpone this briefly.
No problem.
Let's see how we're doing. Hi there. We hope you're on free radio.
Yeah, my name's Wally Cutiford. I was asked to call in during the hour.
You're the notorious criminal who has been trying to block our fine troops, eh?
Mm-hmm, and obstructing city business at public meetings.
It was actually...
public discourse. Oh, did you hear about that?
Well, I actually was reading on IndieBay.org, I was reading on Portland Indie Media, stories written about your appearance at the... I guess it was the Tacoma City Council. Was it last night or the night before?
It was Tuesday night. First of all, I want to apologize for calling in late. I promised to call in at 6. And
you're a bad boy, but we forgive you.
That's what I hear.
Well, no, but tell us. I've already read, frankly, so you don't have to go through too much. I've read that, you know, that you and two colleagues were selectively and abusively, physically abusively, singled out a protest at the Port of Tacoma against the Striker Brigade. Maybe it's brigades. Is it brigade or brigades?
A brigade, and it's actually not even the brigade itself. It's the equipment. It's being driven by a different group of soldiers that are actually going to Iraq.
Okay.
So we're really just protesting the shipment of the equipment.
And what is it, what is equipment actually involved? What is going through the port?
Primarily, it's Striker vehicles. Striker vehicles are armed with speedy transports that take people from one part of the country to another, and sometimes equipment. When you hear stories on the news about army vehicles speeding down a back road and refusing to stop for, say, a five-year-old child on the road,
uh-huh,
and hitting the child, these stories are out there all the time. Chances are, it's a Striker vehicle that did the hitting.
And this was tried a year ago at the Port of Olympia, right?
Mm-hmm. It was tried and successfully won at the Port of Olympia.
And
we had,
go ahead.
10 days of protests down there, street blockades. Senator Murray came to our town, and she just happened to be coming to our town during then. So we picked up the protests and moved it right over to where she was and talked to her. And then we moved right back. All this effort, we had a big mass civil disobedience on the last day. Police, like, pepper sprayed and beat a bunch of us, and we're still going to court for that later this month. And we continued the campaign throughout the summer with public demonstrations and Q&A forums where people could come and ask the port protesters specifically what they did, ask stuff. And it was successful, as evidenced by the fact that they are now going through Tacoma in the middle of the night.
So did they end up sending the brigades that year else through another port? How did they get the brigades supplied last year?
They actually had no Striker brigades deploy last year other than the one in May. It was really weird. But we kept our eyes and ears open for other brigades, and there just weren't any others to be deployed. Now there are brigades other than the one that's deployed. One of them is being formed. One of them has its equipment going through right now, and another one is being transferred here and will deploy soon.
So you're expecting, I mean, some of the equipment has already gone through, right, through the Port of Tacoma this time, right?
It's actually, well, a lot of the equipment, well, we're surprised because we thought the convoys were going to stop on Monday or Tuesday night, and they've kept coming every single night, and we're, frankly, a little surprised that they had that much equipment coming through this time. But they have not actually been loaded on into any ship, and that's really important to point out. We have intelligence that says a ship will be coming in Friday or Saturday to load this equipment onto the ship. Now, the thing is, the place the equipment is now, the quay it's on now, is not connected to one of the two docking areas that the ship is going to come in. They're going to have to take this equipment back out onto the streets and give us another chance to blockade it before it can actually get onto the ship.
So none of
the equipment has actually left the port yet.
How many people are currently there as we speak?
As we speak?
Protesters, I mean.
I'm not sure about as we speak. I know that rallies have been during the day and at night. We're having an emphasis at rallying there 9 o'clock at night, and also every day at the courthouse, the federal courthouse in downtown Tacoma at 4 p.m. I'm in Olympia at the moment.
You plan to be in Tacoma tomorrow?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I have to be because my arraignment for the city council thing is at 2 in the afternoon.
Well, now, I myself am actually going to trial on March 26th against my city council. I was arrested 5 years ago for making a Nazi salute when they harassed another speaker.
And, oh, no way.
Yeah, and so they didn't like that, so they had me arrested. So they didn't try me for it. There was no trial. They didn't even file charges. But I sued them, and for 5 years the case has wended its way through federal court and finally goes to federal trial. We're suing them, though. So
nice.
You're in the position where you have to get charges against you dismissed. The arraignment, of course, just means, you know, they start scheduling all this crap, pre-trials and so forth. What are you charged with?
The initial charge for getting tasered and beaten by the cops, I was charged with third-degree assault.
And so wait a minute, did you attack that taser with your body?
I viciously attacked their taser with my body and, allowed my... Yeah, viciously attacked the road with my face also, as the police were trying to pick me up and stop me from dragging myself across the street so violently.
So it was really sort of a self-protective effort against a suicidal protester.
Oh, yeah. They were totally, yeah.
And you attempted to disrupt a city council meeting and the peace of the city by raising this issue at the city council meeting?
I raised not only this issue at the city council meeting, I described what happened to me the other night, and then I told them, I'm not going to ask you to reform your police department, and here's why. And then I began talking about the David Brehm case. David Brehm was the chief of police in Tacoma in early 2003. There were many indications that he was psychologically unfit, that he was really just crazy, and they did nothing about it. They took every opportunity to cover up for him. He police to protect himself.
You're fading out there. Are you there?
And stalk and press his wife.
Wally, we're having trouble hearing you, Wally. Hello, calling all Wallys. Okay, well, try and call us back, because I think we've lost you for some reason. Maybe you can get back to us. And hopefully, we have a call on the same line. Maybe it's our man again. Hi there, Tacoma Police Department.
I'd like to turn myself in for arrest.
Yes, we will arrest you, but only if you meet certain conditions and criteria, of course.
I have to be a vet, of course.
Now, are you a vet?
I'm a vet.
A vet of?
The United States Navy back during the Clinton years, so I didn't go to any war or anything.
And so, in other words, you have no crimes to your credit at this time?
I am charged with criminal trespass, second degree for the Port of Olympia stuff, but I have no crimes on my record or anything.
I actually was talking about the real crimes, your war criminal days with the Navy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I fixed radios on a ship in Florida while we bombed babies in Bosnia, and I'm not up on any charges for fixing the radios yet. You never know what's going to happen.
Uh-huh. But, of course, you will be protected, and as our valiant CIA is from such kind of expeditions in Germany, where there are, I guess, 15 CIA agents facing arrest warrants for their patriotic duties and trying to wring information 24 style out of individuals throughout Eastern Europe. They've gotten their little camps in the rendition program. But
oh, yeah. The CIA is protecting their people in Germany?
Well, the CIA is, the U.S. is refusing to, extradite them for trial.
Oh, yeah. And well, make sure to tell them not to come to Tacoma, because Tacoma hates vets. They tase them all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
How many people are a part of, who are doing this protest, have seen war criminal service in one of the military branches?
There's myself. There were three members of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Tom Cassidy, who actually, there was a report out by Michelle Malkin who said, like, oh, look at this video. The protesters are calling the sergeant a douchebag. The actual quote was, don't listen to your sergeant. He's a douchebag. She neglected to inform her listeners that that was Tom Cassidy of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And really, who else has more right to call a sergeant a douchebag, you know?
So I understand there's also a chapter of SDS, at least in the previous activity that was fighting the newly reconstituted Students for a Democratic Society.
Yeah, members of that are there.
And what,
if I can interject really quickly,
sure.
There's another Iraq veteran named Seth, and he was on the front line while I was being arrested, and the police pointed a taser directly at his heart and threatened to tase him too. So the whole, like, tasing vets thing, it's not even just me. They got a real thing about us vets.
Well, did they know you were vets? I mean, did you have your uniforms on, or?
Oh, I did not have any uniform piece on or anything at the time. They may have singled me and especially Caitlin out for being the anarchist leader, you know, like, oh, that's the anarchist leader. Get her, you know.
So how many people were involved in this protest? What was it, on Monday?
It was Sunday night. It's being reported as Monday because the arrests were at like 12:05
right.
Monday morning. And there was about 30 to 40 people at the protest that night. And thankfully, the abuse that I went through inspired a lot more people to come out the next night. We had about 100 to 150 people the next night.
How, you know, I'm looking here in Santa Cruz. We have a city with a liberal reputation. I don't know if you know anything about Santa Cruz, but it's supposed to be a very progressive city. You know, the mayor gave out medical marijuana in 2002 and supported this and that. But in fact, you know, what really happens in Santa Cruz is something quite different. And I'm wondering, have you always had such a militant tradition? Because you had city council people involved in this whole thing, didn't you?
Yeah. This is actually like... I'm a lifelong resident of Olympia, Washington, so I'm actually used to people going over their time at city council meetings and all of this stuff. I thought the police were a little outrageous in Olympia at the one time, at the Port of Olympia, and really they were. But having seen what Tacoma is, I'm just like, wow, I'm glad I don't live there.
How big is Tacoma?
What was that?
How big is Tacoma?
Oh, how big is Tacoma?
Tacoma's a couple hundred thousand people.
Huh. Now, you know, I work down here with a lot of homeless people in terms of trying to encourage the city to restore basic rights like the right to use public spaces, the right to sleep legally somewhere at night. Do you have a large homeless population up there?
We do, actually. We have a considerable homeless population, and that's like an entirely another story. They passed a really nasty anti-homeless initiative back in November.
You're talking about Olympia.
Yeah, in Olympia.
What about,
and we've been organizing around that ever since, and we started a tent city at the beginning of February.
And actually, we had some of your Camp Quixote people on the air here talking about it.
Nice, nice. Very cool, very cool, yeah.
So is there any conjunction between, it sounds like you got a lot of people involved, or are people from the homeless community coming in, involving themselves in these anti-war actions, and from, you know, environmental groups, feminists, gay groups? Are you getting a broad cross-section, or are you still sort of limited? What's happening there?
Somewhat limited. We do have a lot of overlap in organizers. There are some people that are dedicated to one or the other, and then a few people who are helping work on both. The Camp Quixote folks have received a lot of support, especially from the Olympia chapter of Iraq Veterans Against the War, because homelessness is a huge issue for veterans.
But Tacoma is a much tougher place, apparently, in terms of the police. How about in terms of how they treat the homeless?
I don't know, actually. I'm not the expert on that. We'd have to get some of the Camp Quixote folks to see if they know.
So how can people down here who are twiddling their thumbs and waiting for the next election or want to hold up a sign every week or so, you know, for an hour on Friday, or maybe go to a protest once a year, how can they actually do something to help change things? I mean, we actually have a protest coming up, I believe, in a week from tomorrow where we're going to go to Representative Farr's office. That's our congressional rep. He's opposed the Iraqi war. He's actually moved for an elimination of the use of force resolution, but he won't vote against the military budget. We're trying to get that to happen. Some of us also want him to vote against the initial resolution of force that was passed, like, I guess, a week after 9/11, that essentially gave Bush the carte blanche. He wants to start wars whenever and wherever he feels the country is threatened, right? So, You know, any suggestions as to what, you're not in Santa Cruz, but have folks in other cities sought your assistance and in advice in terms of what? And we don't have any port down here in terms of, you know, there's no striker brigades going through.
It's hard to really replicate our actions if there is no port that shipments are going through, although I would encourage people to definitely check up on that, their nearest Army bases, and find out if that really is the case, because sometimes these things, they really go unnoticed unless people dig them up. We have gotten a lot of inquiries from people in other cities saying, hey, wow, this is awesome. We're in contact with people from San Diego who want to replicate it down there.
Uh-huh.
And my biggest suggestion is, well, like, contacting elected officials is usually just a waste of time, so I'm not really going to tell people to do that so much. Definitely investigate into what your army is shipping out of what port near you. Find out what brigades or what suspicious cargo is going out. Do some observation at your local military installations and see if you see anything that indicates something weird. Check out the freeways for military convoys. And if you are able to find out that, oh, they're shipping this stuff through this port at this regular time, then you're able to organize around that. That's the Port Tacoma protests are the result of months and months and months of investigative work of all sorts, Freedom of Information Act, public request documents. And now we're seeing the fruit of our labor in worldwide news and a solid attempt to end the war by cutting off supplies from Fort Lewis.
Wow. Well, we're talking with Wally. Is it Cutterford?
It's Cutterford. That's right.
Is there a website you can recommend for people who want to keep updated on this situation?
Yeah, actually, I post frequent updates on my blog, which is wallynotorious.livejournal.com.
Wallynotorious.livejournal.com.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay, I'm writing it down here.
Cool.
So again, that's wallynotorious.livejournal.com for those who want to keep it up to date. Anything you want to advise us to do to help support your effort other than write nasty letters to the Tacoma City Council and DA?
Actually, yeah, I would like the personal request, since I've been fucked over pretty badly by the Tacoma City Council and the police. Go to the City Council's website. You can get the mayor, the deputy mayor, the city council, and the police chiefs, all of their email addresses off of that website. And, yeah, I gave them a ringer yesterday and asked them, you know, hey, so what do you think about how you've been treating me? And I would love it if other people emailed them and said, hey, what do you think about this? Or just up front just said, hey, shame on you for beating and tasing this military veteran and all this stuff out, you know, out of the Port of Tacoma.
Give me the
other protesters as well, Jeff Berryhill and Caitlin Esworthy.
Well, give me the just a kind of a brief 2 or 3 minute description of what happened to you at City Council. You mentioned you were critiquing a past police chief who you feel was psychologically out of control and should have been, you know, dealt with. What happened? I mean, I've been arrested numerous times at City Council. and I've been convicted zero times in terms of those arrests in Santa
Good
Cruz.
To hear.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, it's a drain. You know, it's you have to mobilize resources to fight it. It makes you more apprehensive when you approach that podium, that microphone. But anyway, what happened to you?
So basically, I was making that connection to David Brame and how they should have gotten him out and they never did. And I told them, I'm not asking you to reform your police department, because if you had any inclination to do that whatsoever, you would have cleaned up your shit. I didn't say shit, but I said you would have cleaned up your act 3 years ago. So there's obviously no point in even asking you to do that. And they didn't like it. They started telling me I did go over on my time, which is evidenced by the video on the City Council website. And they told me, you have to, no, your time is on. You have to go. And they kept telling me I had to go. And I said, no, your police officers nearly killed me the other night. You will listen to me.
How long did you speak for?
I have not timed it. I think it was about 3.5 minutes. It was barely anything. And I wasn't even talking off the top of my head here either. I had 4 pages of a prepared speech and big Wally handwriting. I mean, I was just like, you know, it was prepared, but I was telling them, like, no, I prepared this, and you're going to hear me out.
What was their time limit? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
2 minutes.
Ah, so you went a minute and a half over your time limit, boy.
Mm-hmm. And earlier in that same meeting, they had a labor representative. talk about different labor relations issues, and then he went over his time, and the deputy mayor actually said, we allowed him to go over because he represents a lot of people.
Well, you were of course, in a certain sense, a representative for people. Were you speaking just about the police chief issue, or were you also speaking about the situation at the port of Tacoma?
I was speaking about both. Most of my material about the port of Tacoma was ripped up and destroyed by the police after they pulled me away from the podium. It's actually really interesting. You should go to the city council website and watch this video, because you can see how, like, they're telling me to go, and I'm talking about the police brutality, and they're like, cut the feed. We're going to commercial. And they actually have this little screen with this bubbly music come up, like, we'll be right back.
It sounds like the Santa Cruz City Council, actually.
Oh, yeah? Oh, wow. It was really 1984 to watch.
So you're going to court on well, these are felony or misdemeanor charges?
Oh, just misdemeanor. One count of obstructing a public servant and one count of criminal trespass. And I have my arraignment tomorrow afternoon.
Criminal trespass for being in a public place during a public meeting, huh?
During a public meeting, yeah, apparently.
And you have legal help, people who are volunteering to assist you?
I do have an awesome lawyer, Larry Hildes. He kicks ass. He's representing some of us in Port of Olympia, and he's basically been on site to represent anybody who's been getting arrested at this. So,
well, good for him, and hey, I appreciate your calling in. Any final words? Oh, actually, we have a comment from our local vet here, who I've been castigating as a war criminal, Bob Patton. Go ahead, Bob. You got a question here for Wally.
Awesome. Just a comment, Wally. I sure appreciate hearing all the good information you're coming up with on how to attack the efforts of the military to be able to block some of the shipments, or at least bring some high visibility to the war and how it's affecting our communities here. I'm a Vietnam vet and not proud, and
yeah.
I've been over the years shutting down gates at forts and demonstrating at different places. I don't know if you've heard of the Vietnam Vets Against the War. I was part of that, and then we spun off a little bit later to the anti-imperialist vets. I don't know if you're connected up there with any of the Freddie Champagne or any of the people from the pepper spray production there in Seattle, but there are a bunch of old vets there too. I want to encourage you to keep up the work. I know down here in the Bay Area, when Brian Wilson got run over by the trains in the train track when we were blocking, and he lost his legs because of that. He's a veteran. You did. Oh, great. Well, I feel that what you're doing is as inspiring as what happened then. So I'm just saying, keep up the good work. We're not having anything happen around here. The vets around here have just kind of flopped. So thanks. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, you bet. Yeah. Oh, wow. He lost his leg. I mean, yeah, I got tasered, but, you know, I'm still in one piece. So.
And stay in one piece.
Yeah, will do.
Well,
awesome. Thank you for your support. I thank everybody for their support and love. This has been really, really awesome.
Sure. I appreciate your calling in. Wally Cutterford, you have your own website, wallynotorious.livejournal.com. If you want to check out his Tacoma arrest, go to the Tacoma City Council website. And you might even, you know, spend a moment, if you're sufficiently outraged by emailing the Tacoma City Council your concerns and the Tacoma Police Chief. Thanks for calling, Wally.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
All right, man.
Have a good one.
All right. And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the phone number here at Free Radio. You're listening to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me is human rights organization activist Bob Patton, anti-war activist as well. I guess we should do this before we got to swallow this pill. What, you just came from the offices of Smiley Riley, the baker cum mayor. What did she cook up for you there?
Well, it'd be hard to follow up after this particular interview you had, because they're really doing something there. Human rights organization, if people want to get a little sense of what we're doing, we have a website, www.humanrightsorg.org. That's humanrightsorg.org. We meet every Saturday at the Homeless Service Center. That's 115 Coral Street here in Santa Cruz, from 1:45 to 2:45. And yes, we did have a meeting, a second meeting with Mayor Riley, particularly around the exposure that she gave us last time about the city attorney having come up with a secret and not released to the public, Attorney Barasone's legal opinion on how Santa Cruz anti-homeless laws, or particularly the camping law, is weighed against the Jones decision, which in Southern California, with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, did declare their camping and sleeping laws unconstitutional on the Eighth Amendment. So we have been trying to get information from her to the public with not much progress at all. Now, I did bring the tape with me if you want to play the interview. However, it seems like it's a follow-up on the interview you did with her last week, and she even referred to that a few times. Like, oh, well, I told all that to Robert already. So, you know, you beat us to the punch there, fella.
Ho, ho, ho. Well, I mean, you know, I have stuff I was going to play, too, from, well, we get to hear Vice Mayor Coonerty do a dance around why is the city so such a great city that it doesn't have to follow the Constitution around the Eighth Amendment, while bigger, more conservative cities like San Diego and Los Angeles are following that decision, or at least they've given directives to their police to do so. And cities like Richmond, which is a huge city up in the East Bay, similarly has at least actually changed its law. And I keep repeating this because it's interesting information, it's relevant information, but it's information that our city tends to ignore. But, I mean, what do you think? Is it worth playing this thing, or would you summarize? Did you catch the mayor up in a way that might be educational or interesting?
I don't really think so. I mean, the issue you just mentioned there about Richmond, we had given her a copy of the law. I had to go to NexisLexis to get, which is a computer warehouse or storehouse for a lot of public agencies.
You got the law.
They didn't even have it on their regular site yet, but I did find it written up to be put into their site and gave it to the mayor
again
a few weeks
ago. We gave it to her at city council.
Yeah,
well.
And yet she claims she's still studying it and hasn't really seen the law. It's however, she's gotten at least one copy from us. One of their tasks is to move forward on that and study the Richmond law to see if she can bring some relief in that respect.
Did she actually agree to do things? I know that was one of the things I noticed, and I commented on that. But those who are interested, by the way, can hear this interview with the Mayor Riley. It's archived, I believe. What is it? Last Sunday or a week ago? I'm not sure where it is on the.
I don't recall exactly.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to. I have to get back to you on that. I'll try to find out by the next show. But you can, if you're patient and you thumb through the last few shows, you'll find the Riley interview. It was about 25 minutes long, 20 minutes long, and she at the end of the interview she refused. Well, she made commitments to do a number of things. Actually, I think I played the interview on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I think I did this last Sunday. So if you go to that, if you go to huffsantacruz.org, you can hear the interview. She claimed she was going to do things, smiled, sounded very attentive, looked like she was taking notes. But in the end, when I asked her what she'd agreed to, she'd forgotten virtually everything that she said she'd agreed to do. So what happened with that? Did you get her to agree to anything? Or?
Well, actually, the same thing happened with us, because she had agreed to work on, not necessarily work on reducing the fines, but to find out for Bernard information on reducing the fine according to the fee schedule you get from the state. I mean, it seemed like something that had been agreed upon. Bernard has more information on that, one of the other members, than I do. But she failed to follow through on that, however, promised that she would continue to follow through on that.
Continue to not follow through. Change her not following through. We're talking, of course, about the sleeping ban, which used to cost a $54 bail and now costs a $90 bail. If you fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property or in your own vehicle, even if it's properly parked, you're up for a violation of Municipal Code 6.36010A, which is the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance.
Well, one thing she did remember after some prompting is that the so-called secret document or the secret document or whatever it is that she had was not a meeting but a memo from the city attorney that she asked for. Go ahead. You got a phone call.
Okay. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Robert and Bob. You've got to turn off your radio. Turn it way down because otherwise you'll get very confused.
Well, actually, the same thing happened.
Turn it down. There you go. So what's your name there, caller?
Jack Light.
Hey there, Jack Light. Weren't you also a participant in this unholy conspiracy to gang up on poor Mayor Riley?
Oh, the cookie woman?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Let me give you a little tip here, Robert. You need to speak a little louder, all right?
Very well.
Like Bob.
Yes, sir.
This woman doesn't know what she's doing at all, and she's not running the city at all. The bottom line is that's it. That's the bottom line. This woman is not running the city.
So John, you
Dick,
were
Dick and
John. You were actually
that other guy.
John. You were actually. You went to this meeting yourself.
I sure did, man. I was like very disappointed.
And
if you hear the tape, she said she didn't know. Oh, I don't know anything about that secret meeting, and I don't know anything about our meeting or anything like that. And then she said, "Check this out." Oh, I remember. It wasn't a secret meeting. We talked about the issue. I said, oh, whoa, I knew right then, man, that something was wrong, man. And it was just very disappointing. I just couldn't believe it. A high school student, a senior, could run this town better than she is. I swear to God, Robert, she has no clue what she's doing. She doesn't even know about what's going on downtown with this new patrols, with the...
You know, John, I think what we're going to do is, I think, just because I realize we're talking about her, I'm going to play some of the tape.
Yeah, let's do it.
If we get too bored, we're going to stop it.
The first question is really good. All right. So I'm going to get off the phone, and I want to hear the tape again, too. All right, bro?
All right, John.
All right, Robert.
Thank you.
Cool.
So here's a little of a hot from the confines of City Hall, Bob Patton, Bernard Klitzner, and the man you just heard on the phone, John Hamilton, talking with Mayor Emily Riley.
March 8th, 07, Emily Riley, John Hamilton, Bernard Klitzner, and myself, Bob Patton.
Good day, Emily. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
I know you have a little rest of time.
Actually, I'm just fine.
Okay. And we'd like to go ahead and continue on some of the questions we talked to you about before, around the Jones decision and others. Bernard, you want to start that ahead?
Yeah, I have three questions for you, Emily. The first question is, we came in to visit you in the early part of 2006, and it was actually me, and I asked you to take a position, you know, on reducing the fines for sleeping, mm-hmm. because all the other agencies had increased it, so these people, I think it was 54, now went up to 94,
right.
and you said you'd get
right.
back to me.
You know, I did say that, and I didn't get back to you yet, did I? And the only thing that I've learned since then is that I always want the fees that were raised, but already know, and that the person I talked to then, and I haven't spoken to anybody about this in a while, so I will. Thank you for reminding me.
Okay.
But the person I spoke with then said that the way the fees were structured, and that I know this is true for some of our fees in the city, is we have to structure the fees based on what it actually costs to administer them. And I know that's true with the planning fees. It can't be more than a cost, but it can't be less than a cost. So if that's true with this fine, then I won't be able to do anything. But if it's not, if there is some flexibility there, then I I will support doing it, but I don't know if I can.
You understand, you know, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it negates dramatically 99% of the work that was done, you know, by the Catherine Byer Commission going all the way back. Because out of that commission, you know, one of the few recommendations, if any, was to lower the fine, and they did. So this is, in a sense, you know, negating that work.
Have you talked to any of the other agencies who...
No.
It was actually the raising of the other fees that...
I don't think
work.
We have the energy to go after them, but we're coming after the city.
Okay. All right.
I want to go on to my next question. Last time we met, you mentioned in passing discussion, you know, that when you became a member of City Council in the first 4 years,
uh-huh.
that very early on that you had an informal committee, you know, made a search for a possible homeless camp.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to ask you to hand over, you know, that paperwork and any other evidence that you have from that search.
I don't have any paperwork. I don't have any, Bernard. It was several years ago. And I've already talked to Robert about this extensively the last time he was here. So I don't have anything else to say about it.
Okay. Third thing is that this is coming from a discussion that you have with Robert that I heard on the tape. He was asking you, you know, about what we consider an anti-homeless act, you know, putting up all those parking signs at Harvey West Park and that whole area. And you said, you know, well, I had to balance, you know, the situation. Robert did not follow up on that, but I want to follow up. And I'm wondering, you know, what did you give homeless people in that balance?
Well, I would say that as I've told you many times, and as I've told Robert, and as I continue to believe, I wish we could do more for homeless people than we're doing. We need to do more. It's a shameless situation in this city, in this county, in this state, in this country. But Santa Cruz can't solve the problems all by itself. And I would say that the imbalance, the funds that we give to the homeless shelter, the family shelter that we built in that same time period that the parking signs that you're talking about went up, would, I suppose, not exactly define but describe a sort of balance. The thing is, Bernard, those parking signs weren't put up as an anti-homeless move, in my view. That's your opinion, and I understand it, I believe it. But, so I don't see those signs as anti-homeless. However, I do agree that we're not doing as much as we can do.
You're still making anti-homeless laws in this city. You're not going back on any of the enforcement. In fact, your enforcement has just increased on Pacific Avenue. You now have some kind of P list where people are going to be banned from Pacific Avenue for varying things. To me, that doesn't seem like, I mean, how is that helping or doing more that you're talking about it that we need to do for the homeless? You say we, but you're the lawmaker. You're the ones that can change this about. How are we, you, the city council, doing that?
Bob, those new ordinances and the new program on Pacific Avenue, it's not a new ordinance, it's a new program, they're not targeted at homeless people. They're targeted at behavior, and you know that.
The behavior laws are included and mentioned in the Jones decision. You cannot be forcing people to stand, move along,
Well, we have a disagreement about the Jones decision.
Okay, well, let's move on to that then. Because you say, when the last time we was here, you exposed that you had a... Did you see that memo, I think was your question that we asked about the attorney. Now, was that a memo, or did you have a session with the attorney?
We had a closed session, and we
What was the date of that?
I don't know.
Because I looked through the agendas, and there's no mention of any Jones case or any numbers that indicate that you were going to be discussing that. And according to the Brown Act,
I could be wrong. There was a confidential memo from the city attorney, and it's quite possible that I'm incorrect in that we didn't discuss it in closed session. I thought we did. Maybe we didn't. But the fact of the matter is, the one thing that I did tell you that I have not done yet, because I'm attempting to, I just haven't finished it yet. I told you I would look into the Richmond, the change that the city of Richmond had made in their camping ban. And I am in the process of doing that. I just haven't finished it yet. I haven't even seen it yet.
Okay. I'd like to go back to the possibility of finding out when you have this meeting or get some more information about
We would not have an item on a closed session that was not on the agenda. We would not do that.
I haven't seen it then. They're then asking about the date.
Then I guess I was incorrect.
Okay.
So was
there a public record posted on the agenda that mentioned the intent to discuss this?
There would have been if it had happened. If there wasn't, then it didn't happen.
So you don't even know. Okay. Anyway, I was going to say, what session was it discussed as the same question? What else was discussed at that session or at that time? Do you recall? Maybe that would bring the memory back.
Let me think about it. Oh, thank you. I appreciate this. It was not a closed session of the city council. It was a discussion that I had with John Barasone, our city attorney. It was a confidential discussion that I had after I read the memo, and because I knew that as mayor I was going to be having to talk to people about it. So that was the context of the discussion. It was between me and the city attorney. It was a confidential discussion between just the two of us in his office.
Who originated that memo? Who did you go to John and say,
yes,
I want to know about the Jones decision?
No, I asked him after I had heard Robert had mentioned it at a city council meeting, and so I asked him for his opinion as to what would be appropriate for me to say to the public about it at this time, so that I wouldn't say something that was in conflict with the city charter or city policy or the law.
Well, as a city leader, what do you perceive as your duty to the Constitution? Particularly around this issue, because we're talking about constitutional issues. In other words, I'm getting to the point, do you feel these are just a bunch of pretty words? And are you willing to leave the interpretation of these laws to the lawyers and the courts? I mean, just power and politics. We voted you in. We didn't vote Barasone in. We don't want it to go to court. We want you to protect our rights according to the Constitution. That's why I asked that question. As a leader, what do you perceive as your duty to the Constitution?
I believe it's my duty to follow the Constitution. Absolutely. And I believe it's my responsibility to you and everyone else in this community to take the advice of the professionals that we hire to help me do my job in the best way I can. And I do, and I will continue to do that.
Will you make public the minutes of the session you had with Barasone? Would you be willing to make public notes or your recollection of that?
No.
Okay. So are you interested in any public input, or did you get any public input around this before you had the discussion?
I have and had continued to have quite a bit of input about it, and I appreciate it. Isn't that why we're here right now? You're telling me what you think. You don't seem to have any.
We're wanting to know.
You don't seem to tell me what you think.
We want to know what's going on here.
We haven't been for answers.
We're being very polite. Well, one of the things I did want to mention is that recently, I'm thinking around the newest situation we have here, where there's increased patrol and increased enforcement on Pacific Avenue. Los Angeles has been doing the same thing in this area, the Skid Row area, around the same issues. And just recently,
March 3rd, 07, the district court judge extended an injunction barring police from stopping and searching Skid Row residents without reasonable suspicion that they have either committed a crime or violating their patrol, their parole or probation. Is that where we're heading here?
I'm not going to comment on something that happened in Los Angeles. I don't know anything about it.
It's the same type of
thing. I'm not going to comment on that, Bob.
The Jones case reflects what's going on there just as much as it does here. And that's why we're asking you, weighed against the Jones decision, where we stand with our laws here in Santa Cruz. But you're doing exactly the same things that LA police are doing, your police force doing the same things. Enforcing these inappropriate and unconstitutional anti-homeless laws at a big rate. After we just finished them up with the stats we got from Wallace, looks like he and the police, it's about 60 citations a month. Not the 30, not the 45, but it's up to about 60 citations per month.
I've seen no evidence to support that, Bob.
We can show you.
I don't have anything to say.
We got the stats from your officials.
We'll get it to you. Can we say that in public?
We will.
We'll get them to you.
We got them from you. I'm from your agencies. Paid for. We didn't get anybody in your office with a friendly ear.
But she doesn't know. That's incredible.
Yeah.
She just kept saying she didn't know.
Remember, you're telling me don't match what I've seen. That's true.
Okay. We got the stats.
We'll get them here. Question, Emily. What other memos do you, is there secret memos that we're rolling around?
There are no secret memos.
Well, we got one on Jones. That's what we think.
It's not a secret memo. There are lots of confidential things that...
Well, I call it secret confidential. I'm saying similar words.
Okay.
I'll use the word confidential there. How many confidential memos are there around here that we don't know about that maybe we could like to know? Is that an unfair question?
Well, I mean, it's a silly question.
Well,
I mean, all kinds of... Well, maybe your question isn't silly, but I suppose my answer would be silly. There are all kinds of discussions that people have that are private with their lawyers, with their doctors, with their, all kinds of memos that
about the relationship, with the city council, the attorney, and the city attorney, concerning issues like these, Like we're hearing that nobody, like a marijuana commission, like nobody came, nobody signed up for it, stuff like that. I mean, I don't want to go into that issue because I'm not qualified to talk about it. But the point is, we think that there's a lot of issues that you guys have secret memos going flowing around and we don't know anything about. And this is public business, and we should be able to hear them.
There are no confidential memos that aren't labeled part of closed session agenda items.
Well, there is no pending legislation against, as far as I know, against the Jones case. Nobody's suing you, right? The city. There is no pending legislation. Why should that memo be confidential? And I'm just wondering if there are other items on other things that are in a similar status. That's what I'm asking. Not about every little thing. No, I'm not interested in that, but, I want to know. And I'd like to hear your response.
We do occasionally get confidential memos from the city attorney. I don't count them. I don't keep them. I read them.
Can you give us an example of which ones you read? Can you give us one?
No, because they're confidential.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fine about it.
You do?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Appreciate it. What comes up.
And that was a somewhat garbled sounding tape, but that was Emily Riley facing off against Bernard Klitzner, and you, Bob Patton, as well as an occasional comment from John Hamilton. If you have any thoughts yourself, you're actually able to hear that, give a call to 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. I did make a few notes as I listened to that tape and to restrain myself from stopping the tape every 5 seconds, although, frankly, it was so difficult to hear that it might have been better to stop the tape. But, you know, well, some of my reactions. You know, this idea that you can just sort of blithely say, well, you know, I know you guys asked me why the fines have doubled for homeless people for the essential life-sustaining behavior of sleeping, but I just haven't gotten to it yet. Well, it should be pointed out that Bernard brought this issue up, what, last summer, I believe it was. So for 6 months, she declined to get to it. That's 60 citations a month. 60 camping tickets a month later, 60 $90 fines a month later, she still hasn't gotten to this issue. And instead, she wants to send you off to other agencies because it is true, it isn't the city that's raised the camping fine, but this, because of other fines, the city needs to lower its part of the fine. It's not going to make much money off of homeless people anyway. There's no point unless you want to penalize homeless people or ignore the consequences of that. So it seemed to me particularly cavalier of her to say that. It also, for her to claim that there are not 60 citations a month, shows that she's, again, I think this is an issue that she's, I don't want to say heart dead or brain dead or both on this issue, but that is really what I feel like saying. Because it's an issue that doesn't really interest her. Because if it had, and I talked to her a week ago, well, I talked to her on Monday, I believe it was, let's see, Monday a week ago I talked to her, so it's almost 2 weeks now, week and a half. She can easily contact Scott Lang or Danette Shoemaker, the boss of Scott Lang at Parks and Rec, and find out what we found out, that Ranger John Wallace every month issues about 30 camping citations. And she can look at her own police department reports and see that they issue 30 camping citations. 30 plus 30 is 60. And some of it's sleeping ban, some of it's camping ban, and that's the situation. By the way, if anybody's just called in and I've ignored you, try again, 427-3772. Confidential memo, you know, she kind of jumped around on that one. First she said, oh, it must have been a city council meeting. Oh, then I remember. Oh, help, thank you. And maybe she did, you know. She got a memo from John Barisoni. And the thing here is, you know, there are some matters of litigation that are confidential. But she didn't address the issue of why this was confidential. And she probably didn't address it because, A, she was afraid of incurring John Barisoni's wrath. I mean, she doesn't seem to want to make a step without looking to John Barisoni in these matters. She might say, well, he's our professional, you know, our professional guy who deals with this. He's the guy that the city pays hundreds of thousands of dollars to. And he has an amazing legal contract where he covers both Capitola and Santa Cruz, gets extra fees for every case that he takes to court. I mean, it's plus a huge amount of money as a standard contract each year. And that doesn't mean, you know, that would not necessarily mean he's a bad attorney, except if you look at cases like the Blue Lagoon, you look at cases like the Maurer case, the John Maurer case, where they had to throw out parts of the panhandling ban. The whole law needs to be thrown out, of course. Barisoni doesn't meet a case that he wants to settle, and it's been suggested that this is because it's more profitable not to settle for him, not for the city, because, for example, I'm going to federal court on March 26th.
How many millions have they spent in the last few years settling on some of these cases? It's pretty ridiculous.
Not settling. They don't settle.
They
go to court. And again, I don't have the stats, so I want to be careful here. But it seems in a number of important cases, the Blue Lagoon case,
John Maurer.
The John Maurer case, and cases involving me. Well, this most recent case, they aren't settling either. Now, you know, okay, this is not, I'm not talking about a huge number of cases, but this is an issue, the reasoning as to why the city is saying, we're going to arrest people at night for sleeping. And even though Los Angeles, San Diego, and Richmond, with populations many times ours and much more legal staff, believes they have to stop doing this because of the court decision, we somehow feel we can just ignore the reasoning of the Jones decision, which says that it's unconstitutional and a violation of the cruel and unusual punishment provision of the U.S. Constitution to do this. She has to have some kind of an answer to this. I mean, she can say, you know, we think it isn't unconstitutional because, oh, they can sleep during the day, or, you know, we have enough services, or we're doing all we can, whatever they can. I mean, none of these things are either reasonable or true, depending on which one you look at. But she has to say something. Instead, she says, oh, I trust the city attorney on this issue. And she closes the door on the discussion. I don't think that's a responsible way to behave. Even if you're a person who supports the sleeping ban, you don't support having the Treasury gutted in an upcoming court case. And there isn't really, right now, there isn't an upcoming court case. We've been threatening to do it, but it hasn't happened. So there's no pending litigation. Bernard Klistner was right on target. There is no pending litigation. So why is she taking confidential memos from the city attorney on this and then refusing to divulge them under the Public Records Act? That's the question. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Bob.
Yeah, this is Coral.
Hey, Coral.
Would you tell the audience, explain what explanation that the city council has given for ignoring the Jones decision?
They haven't. The only explanation as we've gotten is from actually Ryan Coonerty, and that actually is a very interesting question. It leads right into the next tape segment I'm going to play, because I did an interview with him shortly after I talked to Emily Riley. Do you have any thoughts on this yourself?
Okay, I'll listen off.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll wait for your for perhaps a future phone call from you on that. Just another quick comment or two about what I got out of this rather difficult-to-hear interview with Mayor Emily Riley, the Santa Cruz mayor. She, let's see here. You can't really have, she talked about getting public input on this memo. She can't get public input on the memo that's meaningful because people don't know what the memo says. And all we can do is talk about the decisions of individual council members as to why, for example, Coonerty. Actually, he's the only person I've really talked to about this, and I don't think I've actually talked to Rotkin. Maybe you can go talk to Mike Rotkin and see what he has said. Bob is shaking his head. But the fact of the matter is, and we're going to hear what Coonerty has to say in just a moment, because he gives his own opinion on this issue, which is kind of humorous to listen to in a way for me. But Riley is saying that she doesn't have to talk about it. Why? Because the city attorney has told her not to talk about it. And until the city attorney changes his mind, she won't change her mind. Now, she has an out to this. She can go to the city council in a closed meeting and say, the public wants to know the reasoning behind why we are, what this memo said around the Jones decision, why we aren't afraid of a lawsuit. You know, I mean, why can't we talk about this? Why can't we at least show the memo to people? I mean, it may say any number of things. What's the big secret here? But she won't do that. And why won't she do that? That she doesn't answer candidly. I guess she's simply saying she doesn't want to challenge the city attorney, or she doesn't want to. There must be another reason, because this would be challenging the city attorney in the sense it would be saying we're going to make public. You know, I would like to. She could be saying, I like to make this public. You know, I might get voted down in a closed session of city council, but I'm willing to raise the issue. She's not. She feels it's okay for the rest of us to remain, you know, what's the word, you know, in the dark and covered with shit like mushrooms. But that's fine with her because the city attorney says it's okay. And this, in a way, kind of typifies this city council, not just Emily Riley. There's a sort of a fundamental contempt for the public. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, it's me, Coral, again. I had my radio turned up, sorry. I thought I heard you say, do you have any thoughts on this, Bob? And you were talking to me about the Jones decision.
Yeah, go ahead, Coral.
Or what that I think that they're thinking. Is that what you asked me?
Sure. Yes. Hello?
Yeah?
Yeah, can you hear me? You got to turn your radio down.
It's all the way down.
Good. Go for it.
I can hardly hear you, though.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
It's a little faint.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just think I don't really have, I don't know if I have an educated opinion. It just feels like that she ignores all the fines, that they're going through some ritual, but she doesn't think there's any consequences to trying to collect, because the homeless aren't going to be able to pay for it, so why should she pay attention to it? And that's no excuse. And then the Jones decision is about a huge city, and they tried to say that it has no relationship to a city the size of Santa Cruz. That's all I've been able to garner out of that.
Who did you... Well, I don't think... I've never heard her say anything to do with the size of the city. I think she was saying that's about Los Angeles, it's not about us, as though, you know, we aren't both in the same 9th district, and we aren't both subject to the same court decision. I mean, we are.
Why would she deny that we are if we aren't? We are.
Because she... Well, I mean, probably because she's taken a position, she's trying to defend it, and she's using whatever tools she can. I mean, it is true that the Los Angeles decision does refer to Los Angeles, not to Santa Cruz. But the same reasoning applies to Santa Cruz. If you're going to arrest someone, the Jones decision says, you have to provide some kind of shelter. Or you can't have a situation where there's clearly, for the foreseeable future, totally inadequate shelter for most people who are arrested or cited, and yet at the same time have a law that makes it illegal for them to sleep. You can't do that. So she says there's a difference, but she won't say why. So that's the peculiar thing. Another thing is that she claims this runaround about the Richmond city law. Richmond's changed its law. She's gotten copies of this law on at least two, probably three occasions. And she said, I haven't looked at it yet. Do you know what it involves? Four sentences. The Richmond city law, the change in the Richmond city law, essentially has a four sentence change, and it says, you know, there shall be this camping violation under the following conditions, blah, 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 blah. Can't sleep here, can't sleep there, can't do this, can't do that, except if there is insufficient shelter, no one shall be given a camping citation. It's not very hard to read. You know?
Yeah, we gave her the copy of it with it highlighted, because I looked this up.
Maybe we need to hire somebody to read it to her word for word. Now, the fact of the matter,
I could feel that she was feeling the heat from especially Bernard and all you guys, but that she just has this defense up and she can't think on her feet. So she's, I haven't looked at it. No, I don't know.
Well, it's not that she's not. It's not that she's, you know, can't think on her feet. She does pretty well thinking on her feet. It's not an issue that's important to her. It's not an issue she has to respond to. It's not, and she doesn't have any real respect for the power that those of us that go to her...
It's not important enough to even tell anybody else. I mean, it's not important that anybody that hears her say that thinks any... You know, she doesn't think the audience who's going to hear her say that. She doesn't respect that group of people.
I mean, the media doesn't care, most of the media. The Santa Cruz Sentinel has just been sold, and its presses are withdrawing to San Jose, and you know, I mean, she doesn't. I mean, they're not going to care anyway. So unless there's, as I was saying before, 50 homeless people sleeping on the lawn outside, preferably, you know, outside her bakery for that matter, it's no skin off her nose. We can make all the appointments we want. It doesn't matter to her.
Yeah, the lack of transparency in this city government has vexed a lot of people, not just on the left, but middle people. People on the right, there's just so much going on behind closed doors and under the power of the city attorney and the city manager that it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and they sure think they have the right to do that.
Do you have a copy of that the Richmond law with you, Bob?
No, not with me, but basically the three sentences were the police need to know whether or not there is available spacing, that the person agrees to go to it, but if he doesn't, then he can be ticketed or arrested, or the person, not he.
Does that cover it, Coral?
Okay, I am interested, but I could turn this radio down. I'm sorry.
All right, well, I will.
I could hear two things at once.
All right, well,
I thought it was all the way down, but okay.
Okay, I'm gonna let you go. Is there more? Unless there's more you want to say.
I didn't hear what he said.
Oh, well. Let's do it again another time. I mean, you know, essentially he said what I said, that, you know, we read the law. It's pretty straightforward. If you haven't got any shelter, you can't arrest someone. Simple as that. But otherwise, you can the camping ban is enforced. That's what it says.
Yep.
And that they did that not because they were friendly and because they liked the homeless, but because they were afraid of a lawsuit. And the only reason for getting a confidential memo from John Barisoni at all is similarly, the city is apprehensive about a lawsuit, and the city anticipates this kind of discussion. To claim that Barisoni can privately advise the city, this is not her private attorney. This is not her private doctor. This is the city attorney. You know, what the fuck is she? I mean, frankly, it really kind of, it, It gets my goat, I got to tell you. You know, I mean, she to claim, to make these kind of outrageous claims with a sunny smile. This is a woman who's going to reportedly be running for state assembly. I don't know. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Coral. Anything else
Thank
you want
you
to say?
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio, it's Robert and Bob. And who knows, maybe you will be the next person on the line. I don't know why my mic is having such a problem, but apparently it is. I'm going to now turn to a conversation I had. Well, actually, the Public Safety Committee is a subcommittee of the Santa Cruz City Council, which is charged with overseeing the police and fire departments in terms of policies and problems and so forth. They aren't really supposed to be a police review board, because we don't want no stinking police review boards. And by the way, if you want, go in there and make your application for the Measure K Marijuana Oversight Commission. If you're a resident of the city of Santa Cruz, it's time to make those applications, not because I think a hell of a lot of this commission, but because any oversight in the police department probably beats no oversight and, you know, may provide a certain in. Although there's some arguments that phony oversight is worse than no oversight, but still, get this thing set up and see what happens is one way to go. And I say go to the city council, give them a call or email them, and fill out an application if you are a city member and want to do that. But the Public Safety Committee met on Monday, and actually I was told by the city council staff they were meeting 2 weeks later. It just happened to be that I went to the mayor's office that day for a meeting with Emily Riley, and as I came out, I saw the agenda on the glass case next to the city council offices, and I learned that an hour later, or 45 minutes later, there was going to be this 4 o'clock meeting, inconveniently, of course, in the mid-afternoon, so no one came to it but me, of the city council's Public Safety Committee, which includes Ryan Coonerty, Ed Porter, and Mike Rotkin. Rotkin was away, so the chair of the committee was Ed Porter. If you were listening to my show on Sunday, you heard me talking to Porter, trying to get him to chat with me, and he was accusing me of violating the honest, the truth of his words, and breaking into committee into going to parties where I wasn't invited and falsely recording people. Lots of kind of phony accusations, which we had a little conversation before this all started. And then we got into the Public Safety Committee. Here's a quick, however, note from the public. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Well, you were on Free Radio, and I just missed you there. So but we'll get to this. I'll give you a moment to call back if you really want to say something before we go ahead. Otherwise, I'm going to proceed into this. Again, this is it starts with the Public Safety Committee. In the room are Coonerty and Porter and myself, and this is the little conference room right behind the city council offices. And then there's a lengthy discussion between me and Coonerty on the issue of the Jones decision. And here we go.
...of the Public Safety Committee is called to order.
Ed Porter speaking.
I will note the role that Councilmember Coonerty and Councilmember Porter are present. Councilmember Rotkin is unavailable today because of business. And so I guess we need approval of a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting. And I think you just got my minutes just now.
Can I see the minutes, please? Member of the public would like to look at the minutes. I don't know. Well, I was...
You were not present?
I was not present. So
then the minutes will be carried over until the next meeting.
Can the public take a look at the proposed minutes?
Certainly. Okay, the next item on our agenda is communication from committee members for information only. Do you have anything that you'd like to put place into the record of this meeting?
No.
Or future agenda items, anything like that?
No. We could... at a later talk about the SRO on
okay.
campuses.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not for this.
For a future agenda item.
SRO? Safety Resource Officer.
School Resource Officer.
School Resource Officer.
Okay, I'll just make a note of that here. Maybe on the 19th or maybe on the meeting after February, March 19th or the April meeting.
That works.
Okay. Okay, then the next item on our agenda is public comment for items not on the agenda, and I see members of the public. One member of the public
not
here.
Not much on the agenda today.
That's true. That's true.
And before we go into my public comment, I'll make a little comment before my public comment, which is the agenda is amazingly short, which indicates to me that the Public Safety Committee doesn't have much to do with public safety or oversight of the police department at all. They leave these issues to the police to oversee themselves. That's why we got into this horrible situation and are still in this horrible situation in terms of political surveillance. We don't know who's watching us, who's watching what events, what the, you know, the guidelines that are currently the situation are weak, promulgated by the police chief and the city manager themselves without incorporating the meaningful suggestions of the ACLU and without any kind of public discussion or debate. So the Public Safety Committee, when it meets, doesn't meet. It makes token motions to meet. And you just heard the entire Public Safety Committee meeting. If I weren't there, that would have been it. Essentially 3 minutes of meeting or less.
Well, okay, Robert, since you are the public here,
we can
feel free
kind of
to
informal
speak
about this, Ed. Ron. I requested of you, Ryan, probably I may have mentioned it to you, Ed, in the past, that I shouldn't have to bring a tape recorder to the meeting for there to be a public record of what's said at these meetings. I mean, you are the oversight body for the fire and police departments, and it seems reasonable, since you're a permanent subcommittee of the city council, it meets at an odd time. Most people can't come to these meetings, that you make a record of what goes on. And you have a tape recording machine, or what is this,
speakerphone? Right.
Yeah, actually, every word you say is going straight to the CIA.
Yeah, well, there we are. And hopefully, maybe it might even get out to the community.
For your record.
I mean, it's not so much what I say, which I know that, you know, a little interest in, but I think it's what you and other members of the committee say, which is important.
If you'd like this to be informal, I'll just say informally that typically we have a staff member here. Our staff member has had an emergency appendicitis and is not here.
Appreciate that.
And otherwise, we would have a staff member here who does take very good quality notes, I would say.
But doesn't make a recording of the meeting.
If you think that should be done, I suggest you bring that up with the council.
I've constantly brought it up with council, as you know, because you've been sitting on the council for 7 years.
Are there any other... I don't believe there are any other subcommittees or committees.
Well, there are commissions that do. I mean, all the commissions, you know, keep a you can go to the library and the zoning commission, the planning commission, the public.
They keep minutes, but they don't keep.
No, they have tapes.
Yeah.
Yep. And the police review committee, police review board, used to keep tapes of its meetings. So it's not an unusual practice, and it seems particularly reasonable considering you have a staff member who could do so. You know, and I just think it would be convenient for members of the public who aren't here. I know that often, you know, I don't know that there's much that goes on here that everybody is interested in, but it would relieve some doubts. And it also would be, you know, you wouldn't have a need to have the gadflies coming to the meeting, sticking tape recorders in your face.
I think the gadflies might still come to the meetings.
I just happen to be meeting.
They don't come very often anymore.
No,
yeah,
no.
Not,
we know when we're licked.
Okay, so for the record, just Robert, I'll let you know that I've written your comment that you shouldn't have to bring a tape recorder. There should be a staff recording.
Well, the public.
Do you have any more topics?
The public should have a right to that. Not, it's not me. I mean, you know,
Well, okay.
I would ask that the public have access.
The public. I'll prefix it with the public.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'm interested in knowing when the last report on taser victims in the police department came out. And what the rules are on tasering in terms of general orders. I know you were working on that for a couple of years, or at least a couple of years ago you were. Use of force was an issue that was at the last
police... Can you repeat that?
I'm sorry.
I'm slow at writing.
One more, no problem.
When was the last report on tasers?
And what are the general orders?
And what are the general orders regarding taser use?
What are the general orders?
Yeah, for the police department. Similarly, the issue of the use of force and display of force. Various departments have that as a protocol and a procedure. Reports are regularly given out when an officer displays a weapon, even if it's a baton. And I'm not saying that our department doesn't enter into some police reports, but there's a specific filing of this kind of thing, which is important, I think.
So what are the general orders on the use of force?
Yes. And that, in fact, may actually be out. And I want to commend the police department while I'm here for actually issuing most of its general orders in disc form on a 25-cent disc, I should say this, but 3 years of harassment from activists. But nonetheless, it's now being done. So I thank the police chief and whoever, perhaps your committee, who got this together. I guess I can't tell from the Public Safety Committee minutes. Are these minutes in the library so one can read them, or does one go to a special file for the community? How do you access
them? You know, I'm not sure, but I'll put that down, too.
Thank you.
Are our minutes in the library?
Right, as well as any documents that come out of the Public Safety Committee meeting, reports. For example, the CPVAW had to do a report earlier, and I'm sure that can be obtained independently, but if it's relevant to police and fire, those that have a particular interest in those issues, it might be helpful to have that kind of stuff appended. I just intended this to be informal, so that's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Appreciate your...
And you're invited and to come on Free Radio and discuss as a new chair.
I'd consider doing that.
Public Safety Committee.
These items will be in our minutes today, and I'll have responses for you by the next meeting.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I see no other members of the public here. Ryan, anything else before we adjourn?
Nothing.
Okay, so we're adjourned at 4:20. Thank you very much.
And so Porter has agreed to look into at least 5 matters, but he hasn't gotten back to me yet. Now it was only a week and a half, so I'll be reminding him that actually that's almost 10 days. That's really the amount of time a Public Records Act request would take, which he would have to respond. For those of you who didn't hear his little preliminary talk with me, which I played on Sunday, in which he was kind of snide, mocking, making jokes about everything I said, and at the same time acting like his dignity had been wounded, Porter was satirized on Free Radio Santa Cruz back in 2000 when he ran for city council. It wasn't a satire that I did. It was a satire done by some other person who took my the interview that I did with him and mixed it up. And he has since accused me of this, suggested that I could very well have been dishonest with him and lied about it, and he has refused to go on tape. And moreover, he had me arrested. He had a police officer come into the meeting and remove me when I tried to tape record, actually did tape record, part of a meeting between the Downtown Commission's subcommittee on the street performers' ordinances and the city council's subcommittee on that. An outrageous action. Of course, you know, all charges were dropped. I wasn't doing anything except being a reporter in that particular context. But Porter is, and I find him insufferably pompous on a lot of these issues, which I find a sad thing in a public official, but perhaps an understandable thing. And I really kind of regret I hear myself on this tape sounding like Mr. Kissass, I'm afraid. But, you know, I always keep hoping that we can coax something out of these city officials, which is absurd, but it's what you're tempted to do when you engage in face-to-face discussions with these folks. Because, you have the natural presumption, you're a human being, they're a human being, we're all at the same table, all that sort of thing. But unfortunately, when you're dealing with politicians, while they are human beings, they're also members of a different kind of fraternity, subject to a different set of priorities and a different power structure. Anyway, Porter left the meeting claiming he was going to do all these things, and I'm actually going to call him on this. I'll probably call him during this next tape. And when I get him on the line, I'll stop the tape, and you can hear me making these requests for the listeners of Free Radio, and he will probably get back to me on some of these requests. I'd be very surprised if he comes on the air to speak, but you never can tell. Who knows? Maybe he will find it more embarrassing not to speak than to speak. But here we now turn to Ryan Coonerty, who kind of lingers behind while Ed leaves, and the two of us are kind of in the room.
And you have 5 minutes? Are you?
I have a couple minutes. Yeah.
You got my message?
I got your message.
So I appreciate your following up on a lot of the stuff we talked about. Can we sit here or do you want us to move outside?
I don't care. I'm not going to stay.
Okay. All right. I just feel responsible for the room.
Ryan, I'm going to officially hand over responsibility to bring the room to Ryan.
I'll make sure he doesn't mess with the room.
And I'm sure that, Robert, you're going to be highly respectful because I've always seen you.
I've always had the deepest respect for the city council
that I've seen around here.
As a hall monitor to the downtown, you know I've always been responsible to you. Never had enough.
critique.
You want one of these?
No.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, have a good afternoon.
Thanks. I'll get back to you.
Okay.
I hope you can send it down. Thanks. So, again, the basic question I have is, and it's being recorded, so I don't want to, you know, sandbag you.
Right.
You have a difference of opinion on the Jones decision, but at the same time you made the interesting comment, the Jones decision is the decision of the Supreme Court, federal court, that in Los Angeles the police should be enjoined from enforcing the sleeping ban section, actually all sections of the public law regarding sitting, sleeping, or lying on the public sidewalk in the Skid Row area between, I think it's 6 in the 9 in the evening and 6:30 in the morning, because there's an adequate shelter in Los Angeles for homeless people. And you said you think our law, which criminalizes sleeping, covering up with blankets between 11 and 8:30 in the morning, and camping 24 hours a day, is distinctly different from the Los Angeles law and perhaps how the court might review it. And I realize you'd be speculating, but obviously
right.
This is a matter of, you know, you've, as I've mentioned, you've had expertise in this area, and you've thought about it, and perhaps you're the person who's had the most legal knowledge around this issue generally. How would our law be different, and how would you make those distinctions for us? Just as speculation.
Well, you know, actually, I can't speculate right now because it's been at least 6 months since I've read the Jones decision or read our ordinance or read Los Angeles ordinance, and I honestly, at this exact moment, I can't remember enough of the details to make a clear argument to you to answer your question. At some point later on, I'm sure.
Plus, you look a little tired.
I am tired.
You have a your sister's having a baby.
My sister had a baby a week ago today.
And you also are teaching two classes at Cabrillo.
Two at Cabrillo, one at UCSC.
And you
helping my sister run the bookstore because she's just had a baby.
You're doing a peace mission to Iran where you're going to serve as a hostage.
Yes. It's the very least I could do. Human shield.
Human shield, yes. You might change my
joke.
Whole opinion to the council if you did that. Although, actually, it probably is an individual. But in your mind, I know you can't give an elaborate distinction, but you must have had some sense, because you said that on the phone, that there's a distinction in your mind between the Santa
Cruz. I remember reading 6 months ago, looking at ordinance, looking at the language that this court cited in Jones,
right,
thinking that there was a distinction, but I because
come back to you,
because it's a 24-hour limit, but the details I'd have to go back and read and refresh myself.
Any chance of you're doing that in the near future? I know you're busy, so that's why I want.
Yeah, probably not in the immediate future. But I imagine relatively near future, if someone wanted to bring a lawsuit against our camping ordinance, that would get us on the agenda. I'm not advocating anyone should or shouldn't. I'm just saying
it would bring it to the front.
It would bring it to the attention.
In fact, Kate Wells, if she's well enough, is due to speak on the issue tomorrow. She's an attorney at the city council. But again, the issue really is because you're one of the few people who's spoken to the issue, albeit somewhat vaguely.
Right. Fair enough.
You know, if I were to play devil's advocate, and I would say, if I argue for the city, I would say, well, the city allows you to sleep during the day.
City also, I believe, doesn't criminalize sitting on the sidewalk.
He criminalizes sitting on the sidewalk if you're 14 feet from a building, but there are areas of the sidewalk
right.
where you can sit.
So that's
you cannot sleep anywhere in the city between 11 and 8:30. So
yeah.
I was wondering, I guess you're not, and you also said you didn't really disagree with what part of the Jones decision you read. And it was, am I accurately quoting you on that?
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with it. When I read it, I'd have to go back and look at exactly what Los Angeles' ordinances were, but in general, I think the Ninth Circuit's a pretty fair and thoughtful circuit, and that it could hold up well under reasoning. So I don't, more often than not, I agree with the Ninth Circuit than I disagree with the Ninth Circuit.
What would be your reaction, do you think, if the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, because it's similar in the sense that During that period of night, there is no legal place for 95% of the homeless people to go sleep on any public property, and on much public, on private property. That's another provision of the Catholic ordinance, which is kind of unique. Makes it even worse in some respects than the Los Angeles ordinance. So let's suppose the court made this ruling that you would have to do something about this issue. Otherwise, you'd be liable, as it has in Los Angeles. What kind of avenues would you want to explore if that happened? Because it's not an entirely impossible or unlikely scenario.
It's not entirely impossible or unlikely. However, Los Angeles, like the city of San Francisco, is a city county. Counties are the primary providers, as you know, of health services. Cities are under no obligation, under no legal requirement, to provide any health or human services. So my guess is that it would be primarily would fall to the county of Santa Cruz in order to devise a solution, since cities have no it's not our general jurisdiction. The city of Santa Cruz has a tradition of providing money for social services, has provided providing outreach, social workers. We have all these different things that we provide, but we're under no legal obligation, nor do we have necessarily the resources to do that. So,
yet yours is the law. The county doesn't have this kind of law. It has a law about
the county
camping.
Does have a law.
Well, it has a law about no camping zones, which are very small, and it has a law against no habitating a vehicle, and it has a law about no sleeping on the roadsides. But it has no general law criminalizing sleeping on public property that I'm aware of. And I've done a lot of research over the years.
Okay. Well, I believe you, but you were asking me not for the legal argument. You were asking me for the remedy. And what I was saying
is it's the legal remedy. In other words, it's the city that's going to be faced with the problem because, you know, the county can say, hey, it's your law, your problem, guys. You know, we don't...
You put the context of the remedy in terms of what will we do to provide shelter for X number of people.
I'm just saying, what would you do to address the issue of changing the law to make it legal? In other words, it seems to me the core of the Ninth Circuit decision is the ruling you can't criminalize people at night for sleeping unless you have some alternative for them. I mean, I could be wrong, but that is what I read as the core of that decision.
And you don't think that the fact that Los Angeles is a city-county system.
Well, remember, not only has Los Angeles done this, San Diego City Attorney also directed or conferred with the police chief, and they also have a suspended sleeping. City of Richmond, as you remember from Mayor Red, has changed its law to, in essence, kind of, I'm not saying they've changed their practices, I'm not sure if they have, but, so it's not just city-county. Now, you may be saying that, well, this Ninth Circuit won't decide that way in a different situation where the city and the county are not the same, but I don't know that that's really different.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, it's a reasonable question to ask, but it's so hypothetical. You're asking me to assume that the Ninth Circuit Jones decision exactly mirrors the decision in Santa Cruz, and that not only would their decision be the same, but their essential guidelines for remedy would be the same. And I'm not sure.
Didn't give guidelines for a remedy.
Well, I mean, but it said
they granted the injunction that said don't arrest them during this period of time.
Right.
In other words, because there are
because you're not providing people with an option.
No city has those kinds of provisions for shelter anywhere in the United States that I'm aware of.
Right.
You know, I don't think they can. And they made it clear they weren't requiring the city to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They were just enjoining the city from criminalizing the status of homeless people claiming they violated the Eighth Amendment. So, do you feel, as an individual, not as a representative of the city council, that the sleeping ban, as it currently exists in Santa Cruz, because there is no alternate shelter for 95% of the community, 85%, let's say, in the winter, because you have the armory open, but even when the armory is open, you heard Ken Cole speaking, kind of responding to Ed Porter at the last council meeting and saying, it's not really an alternative to say you can dismiss the tickets because that doesn't really address the issue. And similarly, this court has ruled giving them the necessity defense in court doesn't address the issue either because they have to go through the process of going to court, dealing with the ticket. Similarly, they get rousted at night. They get told they can't sleep there. their children get woken up if they're with a child or you know, a minor or an elder or a disabled person. Now, I'm not insisting that you provide shelter. I'd like to see that happen. But my point has always been, how can you criminalize people in this situation? And that's just a moral question, perhaps. But here it becomes a legal question. Because what you have is, you may not have an identical law, you have an identical practice in legal terms during that nighttime period.
Well,
60 tickets a month. I mean,
but you're talking about, again, you're saying we might not have an identical law, but we have an identical practice. Without the context of understanding our ordinance, Los Angeles ordinance, and the intricacies of the Jones decision, I don't know. I can't speculate one way or another about it.
I'm just asking you to look at the simple fact. If both cities criminalize sleeping at night, and that part of that particular law is said to be, because they didn't throw out the whole law, they just said, you can't enforce the law at night. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they would say of Santa Cruz, oh, it's okay, they can sleep during the day? I mean, is that a credible answer? Do you think the court would actually respond to that?
No idea. I don't.
I mean, no,
I'm not regularly speaking with members of the Ninth Circuit. Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea.
I mean, you're a reasonable person. I don't know if you're an ACLU member or not.
I am.
If you were talking about this in an ACLU meeting, would you say, yeah, well, the court might decide it's okay for homeless people to walk around all night? I mean, could you say this with a straight face?
You're asking for my legal opinion about whether Santa Cruz violates
the decision,
the Jones
decision, that,
which I don't, I can't, I have no idea. I can't give you that or that.
Well, you have read the decision, but you haven't read it recently.
I haven't read it in months, and I haven't read all ordinances in months, and I haven't read.
In spite of my earnest attempts to get you to read the ordinances.
Yes. I mean,
so how can I best do this? Would a kidnapping, would a bribe?
Yes, sure. All of the above.
I mean, we parked in front of the bookstore.
I don't think the Ninth Circuit, I can tell you that I'm pretty sure that the Ninth Circuit would not approve of kidnapping or a bribe.
Would it approve of taking people after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz if there's no legal shelter? In your opinion, offhand.
I don't know.
You really don't know, or you feel
I really don't know.
As a city council member, are you obliged to?
No, I really don't know. I have to look it all over and look at the legal argument. I think that I don't know what the answer is. If you ask me from a policy perspective, why do I think that a camping ban is an okay idea? I can answer that question.
Oh, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, you know,
but if you're asking me for my legal opinion based on the Jones decision, without having read the Jones decision in 6 months, I can't.
Except that you have a sense of generally what it was. I appreciate it. Well, maybe I actually did ask you that so we can give you a little more rope here. Why is it a good policy decision to have, not so much to have a camping ban, but to have a ban that is enforced at police discretion, not just on complaint, as far as I know. Although Councilman Brodkin claims it's only A, enforced on complaint, or B, in areas of protest, or C, in areas of a concentration of high crime. I think he has different criteria. Why is it a good idea to be able to arrest someone simply for sleeping? I mean, obviously it makes it easier with police, but is that something that
you're arresting people for camping, not sleeping, which is a different, two different things. One, I think that there's a legitimate issue about health and safety issues. If you don't have proper sanitation, if you don't have proper security, it's an issue for the people who are camping. So that's one part.
Mm-hmm.
Two is, I believe it's a political decision that I believe, and I know you disagree with me, provides tremendous support for homeless services, for short-term and long-term housing, for food programs, for job training programs, for showers, all those things. And I think
all good things, but you've not
all good things.
Emergency shelter for only a very small fraction.
Right, but well beyond. And like I said earlier, when a city is under no legal obligation to provide any of those things, I think the resources that we provide are significant and admirable. And I believe that if you looked at the camping ban, what you would do is erode the political support for services that are legitimately helping people. And so you...
Sorry, say that one more time.
That if you undid the camping ban, so you had people camping in...
designated areas.
I don't know why you're saying designated areas.
That's what we've always asked for. In other words,
right, you're asking for it, but that's not necessarily the necessary outcome of lifting a camping ban.
The proposal is
what I'm saying is, hold on.
I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is that if you allow camping that is, one, not necessarily good and safe and healthy for the people who are camping, two, has what the citizens of Santa Cruz, and they've had many opportunities because you've been a candidate for city council, your allies have been a candidate for city council, have many opportunities to voice their what they wish in this area, and they've chosen not to. And if camping becomes a problem practice, then I believe that the first thing to be threatened are the good and legitimate services that are provided that help people in a way much more than allowing camping with, in terms of allowing short-term shelter, long-term housing, job training, showers, food programs. All those are incredibly important if you're trying to undo the legitimate.
So this is the backlash.
The backlash argument.
The argument that if you, and again, we're talking not about camping anywhere and everywhere. We're talking about camping somewhere, because that's the whole point of a camping ordinance that actually allows camping. You don't have a camping ordinance that in any meaningful way allows people to camp, low-income people. But if you did allow it in certain areas, don't you think that in some, and this is the argument this has been, this would take the pressure off residential neighborhoods where it's currently being done illegally, downtown neighborhoods where people are afraid it's happening and they're afraid it contributes to the
crime. As a policy argument that I don't necessarily agree with, and
So you're saying that you think that even legal camping areas would produce, would exacerbate the problem rather than relieve the problem. Am I misstating what you're suggesting?
I don't know. One, it depends on where you're putting the camping areas.
Pogonip, let's say a small section of the Pogonip.
Yeah, without. And I'm saying, unless you're going to retrofit the area to provide security, sanitation, all the aspects, public health care, public health and safety.
Toilets, some camping spots, something relatively, really low income, but no income.
It's a policy argument.
Which you disagree with?
I don't know that I disagree with it, but I don't know that it's viable in any particular spot in Santa Cruz, and that you won't, that it has the political support, because
I see you're packing up to go.
I am packing up right at 4:30 meeting.
How can people reach you if they want to give you input on this issue?
They can call my city council number, they can call my home number, which is the number I list on my city council phone, and they can email me.
Can you give us those numbers and that email quickly?
Yes. My home number is 423-8939. My city council number,
and no paying me off now,
is 420-5020. And my email is rcoonerty@santa-cruz.ca.us.
And I want to thank you again for being the first council member to change your email access so that your emails are actually those which were our city council emails are accessible to the public.
Yes.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, Robert.
And that was Ryan Coonerty in a conversation after the Public Safety Committee meeting a week ago Monday. Not much there as I listened to it. Lots of kind of, I haven't read it, I don't know. A few broad policy arguments without any justification, like if you allow relaxation of the camping ordinance, it will threaten other social services, even though it actually, setting up safe zones in Miami resulted in a doubling of social services, or at least a significant increase, because people didn't like seeing everybody appear, and so they created social services to get people out of sight. The arguments that are being used are, frankly, I think, ignorant arguments. And I think the point is, since Coonerty, like Riley, said he, it's like Riley said she hadn't considered the idea of, you know, the sufferings that homeless people are undergoing because the fines for sleeping have doubled. She hadn't looked at the issues 6 months later. So likewise, Coonerty hasn't read the Jones decision 6 months later. So we have a situation where it's ignorance is bliss. And in a way, and in a certain sense, Uncle Dennis is bliss, or perhaps nemesis, depending on how you look at it. And that's what we're going to be hearing. In fact, we're going to help kick off Uncle Dennis, rather than kick out Uncle Dennis, with a little of The Turtles.
The Turtles?
One of their little-known songs. I've never heard it before. Ellen Cray? Who knows? Here it is. Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday with more, much more, of the same. And perhaps you can be, too. In the meantime, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and then I... We'll get back to it. It's Eleanor? Really?
Eleanor.
Okay, well, here comes Eleanor.
From the time I fall asleep till the morning comes, I dream about you, baby. And I feel all right, 'cause I know tonight I'll be with you. me on my knees, lay down. Hang in, darling, please lay down. Darling, won't you ease my worry now? Layla, drop me on my knees.
Thank you.
Yes, Eric Clapton. From, actually, not too many years ago, sitting down with a guitar and a few friends and laying down some tracks on something called Unplugged from Eric Clapton. Of course, that one, his classic Derek and the Dominoes tune, Layla. I'm Uncle Dennis, back in the hot chair here. Robert's warmed it up sufficiently, I think, for now, and I'll do my best to keep it hot until 11 o'clock. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. We'll do our best to keep it on the air. And towards that end, you might hear some pops and clicks. We might even go off the air momentarily here and there. During this show, I'm going to be checking on some things. I've been out of town for about 3 weeks. And wouldn't you know it, just as soon as you leave the city limits, the whole place goes to hell. I have heard from pretty much every single one of my my clients during the period of time I was out of town. And, of course, being one of the people that helps keep Free Radio on the air, being out of town didn't help that either. So, anyway, as far as I know, we're back on the air and broadcasting. And we'll, I'll take a personal look into a lot of the issues that came up while I was gone. And, you know, and if you called me while I was away, well, I'm back. Dennis sitting here in the hot seat. Going to play some music of the 60s and 70s on up until 11 o'clock. Of course, at 9 o'clock, we will have the Earth First update. Unfortunately, only have a few stories this week. We'll see what we can pick up some more. Sat down to the old email computer and found well over 700 emails have come in. Of course, 99% of that is spam. But we do have the Earth First update, and we have some news about owls. So we'll bring all that to you right about 9 o'clock. Like I said, meanwhile, we may go on and off the air as I try and get the studio back in some semblance of order. Anyway. I want to thank all those folks who helped out while I was gone to try and keep us on the air and broadcasting. They went to some heroic efforts. I'm sure all our listeners appreciate everything y'all did. I sure do. And I had a great time. I'll tell you more about it later on. But right now we're going to get back into the music with the Allman Brothers.